It is Tuesday, February 12, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Theater Squared's seventh season continues with Sons of the Prophet through March 3rd at Walton Arts Center's Nadine Baum Studio. This comedy offers a painfully honest view of how we cope with wounds that refuse to heal. Tickets and more information available at theater2.org or 443-5600.
Ahead on Ozarks, the continuing evolution of charter schools in Arkansas. Jacqueline Froelich has that report in about 7 minutes.
Plus, our monthly survey of visual arts in the area, including a visit with three architecture students at the University of Arkansas about their photographic studies of different places in Northwest Arkansas. And for Fat Tuesday, we go inside the kitchen of Maddie Schmidt to make a Cajun classic, the beignet.
First, a bill that would have Arkansas legislators study readiness of the state's public schools to respond to acts of violence has been approved by the State House of Representatives. If you'll recall, State Senator Linda Chesterfield introduced Senate Bill 93 to determine what Arkansas's public schools need to ensure safety of their students. While the study would assess schools' policies and procedures regarding active shooter or other situations where school students and faculty might be in danger, the legislation itself would not impose specific policies on school districts, leaving schools to decide what response measures work best for them.
I don't like one-size-fits-all legislation because each school district is different and each school district is better suited to determine its own needs, but I want them to have something in place and make them aware of the necessity of having something in place on the front end rather than after a tragedy has happened.
The bill heads back to the state Senate for approval of a House amendment that made minor changes to the bill's language.
The Applied Sustainability Center at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville has selected 8 cities to take part in a sustainable energy initiative by the center. In late November, the center received a grant from the Arkansas Community Foundation for the center's Sustainable Energy Scorecards and Education for Municipalities program, a program that will help cities explore energy efficiency and renewable energy in their communities. Cities selected for the program include Arkadelphia, Fayetteville, Gold, Harrison, Hot Springs, North Little Rock, Searcy, and Wynn. The energy footprint of those cities will be studied, and Michelle Hossel, the director of the Applied Sustainability Center, says cities' progress towards sustainable energy consumption will be monitored.
Depending on the city, we have anywhere from 3 to 8 years' worth of energy records. So we know how much energy it takes to run a particular community. Everything from the city, municipal government, to the schools, the households, the commercial and industrial sector. That establishes a baseline for energy consumption. And then once the city begins to focus in a comprehensive and holistic way on driving energy efficiency, we'll be able to see the reduction in energy consumption over time. Hopefully.
She says the center will also look at cities' deployment of renewable energy resources, assessing how many more kilowatt hours are being generated for use by selected cities in coming years. According to a release from the university, the cities selected for the program were chosen to ensure diversity in terms of total population and utility type, and cities were also selected based on their reputation for being serious about sustainability initiatives.
Residents of the city of Lincoln tonight will have the opportunity to watch the film Lincoln. It's a biography about the life of the 16th President of the United States during the Civil War. The screening takes place on what would have been President Lincoln's 204th birthday. Mary Ann Spears is the principal of Lincoln High School.
We had a company from San Francisco get with us called Active Voice, but our school board approved that we could do that. We're one of 8 cities in the nation to show that, and mainly chosen because our name is Lincoln. So the other 7 towns are also named Lincoln across the nation.
The film has received 12 nominations for this year's Academy Awards ceremony, which takes place later this month in Hollywood. But tonight's screening is free and it's open to the public. It will take place beginning at 5 in the Lincoln Middle School Auditorium, and a panel discussion about the meaning of leadership and civic engagement will precede the film.
The college baseball season starts this weekend, and the Diamond Hogs have already raked in predictions and favorable rankings. This morning, one more prediction was added to the list. The SEC preseason coaches poll predicts that the season will bring the first-ranked Razorbacks its 3rd Southeastern Conference championship. The poll also predicted that Vanderbilt will take first place in the SEC Eastern Division, pitting the team against the Razorbacks in the SEC championship. The last time Arkansas has taken the SEC crown was 2004, but the Hogs return 5 position starters and 10 pitchers from last year's team, which tied for 3rd in the College World Series. The Diamond Hogs open the 20. 2013 season Friday when they open a three-game weekend series at home against Western Illinois.
Exciting. Mm-hmm. The National Weather Service in Tulsa has issued a winter weather advisory for much of the KUAF listening area. The advisory in effect from 6 tonight until 6 tomorrow morning for Carroll, Franklin, Benton, Washington, and Madison counties. In addition, the National Weather Service in Little Rock has issued a similar advisory for Boone, Newton, and Johnson counties from 9 tonight until 6 tomorrow morning. According to the advisory, rain or snow will transition to all snow in the evening, and the transition will first occur over areas of higher elevation where the highest amounts of snowfall are predicted. John Lewis of the National Weather Service in Little Rock says the snow will miss much of the state.
The accumulating snow would be mainly north of, let's say, Mena to Morrilton to Jonesboro, with the most snow in the northwest from around Fayetteville to around Harrison, where you could see a couple of 3 inches of accumulation by Wednesday morning.
He says the state will see another chance of snow on Friday.
And there's an 80% chance of precipitation with chances of snow after 9 o'clock tonight and a low of 29 degrees in northwest Arkansas. There's a 70% chance of precipitation with small chances of snow accumulation and a low of 33 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, expect cloudy skies through mid-morning, then gradually clearing with highs of 46 in northwest Arkansas and a high of 53 in the Arkansas River Valley. It will be clear tomorrow night with lows from 27 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 32 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Arkansas legislators are considering a bill to establish a special commission to approve public enrollment charter schools around the state, removing the task from the Arkansas Board of Education. Advocates hope the measure will expand the number of charter schools in Arkansas. Opponents say leave well enough alone. The measure has stalled while state leaders look for a compromise. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
Charter schools are publicly funded, independently operated experimental schools. Some are focused on the arts, some on technology, and others are strictly college preparatory academies. The Arkansas Public Charter School Act was passed by the General Assembly in 1999. We currently have 19 open enrollment public charter schools, some operated by national charter companies. Other schools are independent charters. Enrollment in charter schools is open to any student across districts and is based on a blind lottery. Out of 50 million American K-12 students, more than 2 million students now attend a charter school. We also have 14 conversion charter schools in Arkansas, which serve students within specific districts. Now, charters are accountable to the Arkansas Board of Education for academic results and fiscal practices. The board also has sole oversight and authorizing power for new charter schools. Arkansas charter contracts must be renewed every 5 years. But some say the current charter authorization process is congested, blocking charter school expansion in the state. On January 17th, Republican State Representative Mark Viviano, District 46, Searcy, filed a bill to create the State Public Charter School Commission. The 5-member Charter School Commission would review all new charter school applications for potential authorization and monitor existing ones.
I believe that if we set up an independent commission that's appointed by the governor and the Speaker of the House and pro tem and a very nonpartisan way, we can establish this independent authorizer like many states are doing. And their total focus will be to look at the authorization evaluation of these charter school applications. That would be their only focus of this commission.
The State Education Department does have its hands full with oversight of the state's 239 conventional public school districts, and Representative Viviano believes creating a separate charter authorizing commission will free up the school board to focus on other education matters. He filed his bill January 17th. It was referred to the House Education Committee, where it stalled.
We are working on some amendments to the bill on the makeup of the commission. And there's also some discussion and negotiation with the governor's office on maybe a different version of the bill.
Matt DeCampos, communications director for Arkansas Governor Mike Beebe.
Well, the governor's concern is that he doesn't feel that we need another bureaucracy to oversee charter schools. The Board of Education does a good job of that right now. The governor met with Jim Walton, who, of course, has been one of the big proponents of charter schools, and they agreed on a couple of things. The first thing they agreed on was, in fact, that we did not need another board, another bureaucracy to oversee charter schools, but also that charter schools, the interest level in charter schools has gotten high enough to where it is taking up a disproportionately large amount of the Board of Education's time. So there's a new idea being worked on, and the governor has Education Commissioner Kimbrell working on this, is the idea of having the initial review of charter schools done by the Department of Education itself rather than the board, actually having the staff of the department make those decisions and determinations. And then the board is still there essentially as an appellate body. If either side has any concerns about a granting or the denial of a charter, they can then appeal that to the Board of Education. And that's the idea that is gaining some momentum and being looked at now.
Several charter school superintendents queried for reaction to creation of a new charter authorizing commission, declined talking on the record. But Greg Richmond, president and CEO of the National Association of Charter School Authorizers, has been documenting the trend nationwide.
We are a nonprofit membership organization of the agencies that oversee charter schools.
The mission of the National Association of Charter School Authorizers is to expand quality charter schools through responsible oversight in the public interest. NACSA, for short, is based in Chicago and is funded in part by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation as well as the Walton Family Foundation. In 2011, NACSA raised $5 million, awarding numerous grants to authorizers to improve their practice and advance the overall charter school environment. And according to NACSA's online interactive map of 38 states which authorize public charter schools, each varies. Texas has 517 charter schools with 15 authorizers. California has nearly 1,000 charter schools and more than 300 authorizers. New York has 180 with 4 authorizers. But Arkansas is among 5 states with just one authorizing entity.
What it means to authorize a charter school is to make a decision up front about who should be approved to open a new charter school. And then after a school opens, an authorizer monitors the performance of that school. And then ultimately, usually 5 years later, decides whether a school's performance is good enough to stay open or not. So authorizers are engaged in those functions. And in different states, different types of entities do this. Sometimes a school district, sometimes a state education department. Some states have universities in this role. Some states have boards that only do charter schools in this role of authorizing. So it's done by different entities in different states.
And Greg Richmond said that no one type of authorizing institution is most effective.
But the thing that's most important is that whoever is doing the work actually wants to do the work and has the capacity, the staff, to do it. And if those two factors are present, then they're more likely to do a good job.
Greg Richmond says that authorizers with statewide oversight tend to do a better job than, say, a university authorizer who oversees just a few charter schools in one district.
Universities, I think, can be, and a number of them are, very good authorizers, but it's no guarantee. So in Michigan, for example, universities like Central Michigan University, you know, is an authorizer, does a very good job. In Missouri, universities are authorizers and historically have not done a good job. You know, and it really gets back to, is the institution actually interested in doing the work and committed to doing it well?
But while state departments of education may have the expertise, they may not make good charter school authorizers, Richmond said.
But it's kind of against their DNA about what they're set up to do, because the job of a state education department in general is to have a set of regulations that apply to public schools and then to enforce them across the state. That's what they do. And then when you ask that type of entity to oversee charter schools, which are supposed to have some freedom from those regulations, a lot of those state education departments have trouble with that. They tend to try to want to enforce the same regulations just across the board.
That's why 10 states, Richmond said, have created special boards that just do charter school oversight, what Arkansas State Senator Viviano initially sought.
So that's an idea that is gaining some traction lately around the country because it seems to have some elements to it that would lead to quality in the long run, and that's why more states are taking a look at it.
The Arkansas Department of Education, however, has a designated and seasoned charter school program director and program advisor on staff who could potentially serve as authorizers for charter schools in Arkansas, but no one will say for sure pending an amended or even new draft legislation due in the coming weeks. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich. For KUAR News, I'm Jacqueline Froelich reporting in Fayetteville. For KTXK, I'm Jacqueline Froelich reporting in Fayetteville. I'm Jacqueline Froelich reporting in Fayetteville.
It's been a busy month at the Arkansas Legislature. State lawmakers now in their fifth week of the session. Lots of action on guns, abortion, and a $1 billion super project. Roby Brock with our content partner Talk Business recently caught up with John Brummett, political columnist with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, to talk about a number of storylines playing out so far in this year's session.
This Republican majority in the legislature has become just the easiest thing for you to write about in your political columns, has it not?
I have not touched on a national issue in about, seems like a month now. I may want to do it, but something inevitably will happen at the session, and I'll write about a legislative issue. It's a wealth. It's a bonanza.
You should have wished for this Republican majority a lot sooner.
You think?
You could have.
Well, for work purposes, certainly, yes. For subject purposes.
All right. We're a month into the session, what was supposed to be called the Medicaid session, the tax cut session. It has become the guns and abortion session. Why do you think these social issues have come to the forefront so early and so quickly?
Because they're easier. Have you seen any polls about Arkansas's attitudes about guns and about abortion? These are extraordinarily easy, popular positions that the new Republican majority has taken to advocate rampant, universal use of armed weaponry and to restrict, perhaps even unconstitutionally, or certainly even unconstitutionally, the right of women to an abortion. Those are overwhelmingly popular positions. And superficial public opinion in Arkansas, they're easier to get done. We've got Medicaid and whether to cut taxes and how to cut taxes and whether to expand, and fiscal issues are difficult. You have to get down with some mathematics and make those work. That's all deferred to later. Right now, this stuff is politically easy.
You have written a lot about Senator Jason Raypert. He has been one of the leaders on charging forward with some of this abortion legislation. Are you just obsessed with Jason Raypert?
Who was that again?
Senator Jason
Raypert.
Oh,
yes, Jason Raypert, right. Well, maybe so. Maybe so, in a healthy way. I think he's sort of the face of a new kind of Arkansas politics that we need to keep an eye on. You know, a few years ago, before the state made the complete move to Republican control, there was a marginalized right wing of the Republican Party. People like Jim Bob Duggar, Jim Holt, they had their popular bases of support, but they did not prevail in the main in the Republican Party. Jason Raypert is of that school, just with a little better haircut maybe and a little better playing of the fiddle. And so he gives a better veneer to that kind of extremism, and it is a politics that can prevail with the numbers now because of the majority. So he bears watching. The fetal heartbeat abortion bill is an extreme bill, more extreme than anything in the country. There are thousands of ways to restrict abortion and to make a statement about abortion, but this one is, I think, even the governor, who's timid about saying these sorts of things, has now said it's blatantly unconstitutional. He represents to me with a certain ability to certain sales ability. He represents to me the face of a new mainstream, which only a few years ago was extreme. And I sort of it's important to me to keep my eye on that.
Well, you've brought the governor up, and you have written about Governor Mike Beebe and Senator Jason Raypert in this holy, unholy alliance that mm-hmm. they may have. You've got him fighting Raypert's supposedly on this abortion bill.
Well,
at the same
really?
Time, he's made him the lead sponsor on his grocery tax cut, his signature piece of legislation. Is this grand strategy on BB's part, or is this the only strategy he could play because of the cards that he's got with a Republican majority?
You know, you're asking me the thing that everybody in the Capitol is asking. For background, the centerpiece of the governor's apparent legacy is his continued drawdown of the grocery tax. In this session, he has tabbed as the sponsor of the bill in the Senate, Jason Rapert, the same fellow I was just talking about as the face of the new extreme slash mainstream of the Republican Party. And a lot of Democratic senators are wondering, why did he do this? But one Democratic senator said to me, it will all be revealed to us in time, as if the governor, BB is he's a tactician. He's a strategy guy. He's willing to go along and do a little something here that looks like that's kind of a feint for some other. What did he extract from Rapert? We don't know. We expect something, but it's the great mystery of the session. What has agitated me about it is that a man who is the face of an extreme socially conservative bill has now been granted by the Democratic governor this compassionate face of this effort to relieve people of their grocery taxes. There are a lot of Democrats who are offended that the governor has done this, and we all are simply waiting and wondering, was there a reason and how will it be manifest? And we don't know yet.
As we tape here on Friday afternoon, we have learned that the much-hyped Medicaid audit report has come out, not nearly as explosive as it was led to believe that it was going to be. There are some isolated incidents of some abuse and some single kind of things that are pulled out. But what do you make of the fact that this legislative audit report did not come out as explosive as it was hyped to be, in terms of, we were told it was going to be hundreds of millions of dollars of waste, fraud, and abuse? That is not in this document.
No, and I can't imagine why it was overhyped in the beginning by leaked information from Republican legislators, and then delayed, and then Democratic forces or the governor's forces managed to get, or the human services people managed to get it tamed. It's all part of what I think is happening on the Medicaid issue in this session, and that is that the new Republican majority wants to be able to say that we, before they even think about expanding it, we fixed it now. We fixed existing Medicaid. There are inefficiencies in it. There are elements of fraud. There are people who get put on Medicaid who shouldn't. It is an important step, and I think this audit was just part of sort of a scenario that's been laid out.
Are you saying it was maybe some political theater?
Yes. I think it was a great deal of political theater. But if here's what the human services people are saying. If it gets us to expansion of Medicaid, which they believe is vital and important for the state, then we are willing to, yes, confess that there are inefficiencies in this audit, and we will do everything we can to fix them. And that is what we're going through right now. And there's really nothing in the world wrong with it. If there are folks going to a hospital and getting steered to Medicaid who shouldn't, everything's right about fixing that. Mm-hmm. And if this is a phase that we endure in order to get to a climate where we can look at expanding Medicaid, then it's all for the good, I think.
We have seen some Republican governors just this week come out in support of Medicaid expansion. Do you think that is carrying any sway with Republican legislators at the state capitol?
I have written, and nobody has told me it was wrong, which doesn't mean it was right. It's just that nobody's told me it was wrong, that Medicaid expansion has now been sold. The sale has been made. We're just arguing about the price. We're arguing about to what extent will it be expanded, to whom will it be expanded, and what do we do about fixing Medicaid in the interim, and do we do it in a regular session, or do we do it in a special session, or we do it in the next fiscal session? You will notice most of the discussions are not about the conceptual wisdom of it. I think that we are inevitably in a position in which we're going to expand it. It's a case of how much and when and with what sort of waivers from the federal government.
Ruby, We Rock talked with John Brummett, political columnist with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, last week after the completion of the fourth week of the Arkansas Legislature's business. Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
Defense spending takes up a huge chunk of the federal budget, so whether the sequester takes effect on March 1st or not, the Pentagon's purse is on the line. I'm Neil Conan. Weapons procurement, force levels, health and retirement benefits, former Pentagon official Michelle Flournoy and NPR's Tom Bowman on the future of funding the Department of Defense. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon at 1 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
It is Fat Tuesday, and communities from New Orleans to Eureka Springs to Fayetteville are celebrating in various ways. Food plays a major part in Mardi Gras, and recently, Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas went inside a local kitchen to find out how to make a Cajun delicacy, the beignet.
When I think of Mardi Gras, I think of New Orleans, naturally. And when I think of New Orleans, I think Cajun food. If I'm thinking Cajun food in Northwest Arkansas, I think of Maudie Schmidt, owner and chef of Café Rue Orleans in Fayetteville. Maudie grew up in New Orleans, attending Mardi Gras events. She says that because you're along the parade route literally all day long, the food you bring have to last as long as you do.
When I think back of Mardi Gras, fried chicken's a big thing because you fry chicken and it keeps all day on the parade route. There's always a pasta salad, and it can be anything from, you know, shrimp to chicken pasta salad or just vegetarian pasta salad, because pasta goes a long way and it's filling. We always had king cake.
She says that Mardi Gras is all about tradition and family. Those that live outside of New Orleans return to see cousins, aunts, and uncles, and they expect a certain kind of food, much like on Christmas Day. For Maudie, that was Aunt Jenny's okra, shrimp, and crab gumbo.
I spent many a Mardi Gras at my Aunt Jenny's. She doesn't live far from St. Charles Avenue, which is the parade route, and so it's walking distance, and so it's one of those things when I look back on my childhood, I remember those things, going to her house, and you knew what you were going to eat because basically you had the same menu.
Along the parade route, you can purchase lots of different handheld foods, but not your traditional fair foods. These foods have a Cajun flair, like crawfish po' boys or beignets rather than a funnel cake.
It's probably the most mispronounced word, because it's B-E-I-G-N-E-T-S. So a lot of people say begnets, big nuts. We've heard some really crazy things through the years of how people pronounce it, but it's really beignet.
So what's the difference between a funnel cake and a beignet?
As a chef, the only difference is the shape. It's basically the same dough. You know, every culture has a fried dough. The Hispanic population, you have the sopapillas. The people from New Orleans and the Cajun culture, you have beignets. You have funnel cake is, you know, America, Middle America. It's kind of the same dough. It's a sweet dough, sort of a pancake dough. And they pour it into hot grease is a funnel cake and put powdered sugar on it. Beignets are rolled, a little stiffer dough, not quite as wet and runny. And then they're cut in squares and thrown in hot grease and then again powdered sugar on top. So, you know, we all have our little bread fried dough. Every culture has that.
A beignet uses a stiffer dough, not quite as wet and runny. It's rolled out and cut into squares, dropped in grease, and when it's finished, covered with powdered sugar. The Cajun version of fried dough. Maudie says that when she was growing up, there were two places to get beignets, one of which was Café du Monde, or CDM.
You can't not go to New Orleans and not eat a beignet. I mean, you just have to do it. It's just one of those rites of passage. We use the Café du Monde beignet mix. We order it about probably four times a year. We get cases of it, and we try not to ever run out. It's the same mix they use.
The process begins with mixing the CDM mix with water, covering it with plastic, and letting it rise for a couple of hours. Funny thing, when Café Rue was getting ready to open almost two decades ago, Maudie couldn't get her beignets to rise. She says they looked almost like potato chips. So she called Café du Monde for some advice.
So I get this lady on the phone. Hey, darling, how you doing? I said, hi, I have a question about your beignets. So she says, well, how you doing it? I said, well, I'm adding water and I'm letting them rise a little bit, but they not rising in the oil. And so she said, where you at? I said, I'm in Arkansas. She goes, well, how high is it there? I said, how high, like the altitude? And she said, yeah. I said, I don't know, we're probably about 1,200, 1,500 feet above sea level. She goes, well, in New Orleans, darling, you know we're 6 feet below sea level, so you got to do something different. I said, I know, that's why I'm calling you. She says, try hot water. I said, like boiling water? She said, no, just like turn your faucet on and let it run and get hot and then use hot water instead of cold water. And let's see how those do. She says, call me tomorrow.
It worked, and they've been using warm water ever since.
So you want to make some beignets?
Is that okay?
Let's go in the kitchen.
Maudie spreads some flour onto a cutting board and takes a tennis ball size of the dough, dividing it into three, because beignets always come three to an order.
And what we try to do is make them nice and square, and what we're just rolling them in flour and just hand pressing them. It's really not rocket science. And then you get a nice little square. I like to tug on it a little bit because it kind of spreads out the surface and it won't be real doughy in the middle.
She turns around, and in this small kitchen, the deep fryer is practically behind her. She drops one of the squares of dough into the hot oil.
And it's going to start to sizzle. It'll puff up and get really big, brown, and we'll turn them over once or twice.
They take about 4 or 5 minutes to cook, gradually puffing up more and more and getting browner and browner. Maudie uses tongs to flip them over a couple of times.
They're just swimming in grease. And then when we get them out of the grease, we'll immediately toss them with some powdered sugar. That's the powdered sugar, that sugary goodness going on. Most people want lots of it. And you have to be careful when you eat these, because not only are they hot, but if you suck air in, you're gonna choke on powdered sugar. So that's one of the things. You know, you don't eat them. You don't eat beignets with a black T-shirt because you're gonna be wearing powdered sugar all day long. And you can see. I mean, too bad you don't have smell-o-vision, because these smell, I mean, yeasty and pretty good.
Yep.
If you go to New Orleans, you ought to go see the Mardi Gras.
It is Tuesday, February 12th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
You know, there is never a day when there's nothing to do.
Nope.
Not anymore. Tonight, there's an open house at the new studio for the Photo Society of Northwest Arkansas.
Hmm.
It starts at 6 o'clock at 126 West Emma Avenue in Springdale. The facility has a gallery, a classroom, and two photo studios. And, you know, there's been all of the fuss about buildings on Emma Avenue that need repair. Well, here's one that's getting a new life.
Good.
Also tonight, Fellini in February continues at the University of Arkansas Mullins Library in Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. 6 o'clock every Tuesday through February 26th, and the movie tonight is Emmercord.
This provides me a chance to make a correction. Last Friday, when you were out with the flu, Antoinette and I filled in, we talked about Fellini in February briefly. I said that 8.5 was the Fellini film that had the iconic image of death playing chess.
Yes.
Incorrect.
Oh.
Incorrect. Astute listener sent me a note and said, no, that's The Seventh Seal.
Okay.
So that's the Fellini with that image.
That's what happens when I leave you guys alone.
I know. We mess
up
the Fellini.
Okay, I won't do it anymore.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
The Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter will host Walk a Mile in Her Shoes Saturday, March 2nd, beginning at 9 a.m. at the Bentonville High School track. This fundraising relay in March will feature all participants in high heel shoes to show support for victims of domestic violence. Registration and more information available at walkamilenwa.com. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
In just a few minutes on Ozarks visual arts for this late winter, we'll talk with three architecture students who have their work up at the Ann Kittrell Art Gallery, also their instructor who inspired them for this exhibit. That's coming up in just a few minutes on Ozarks, as well as kind of a look at some of the other visual arts opportunities for the next few weeks.
Right. Lots of visual arts.
Lots of visual arts. Also, plenty of congratulations.
Okay.
This is...
Congratulations.
First to the University of Arkansas softball team. They are 5-0 to start a season for the first time in program history.
Good for them.
Yes, they are 5-0. They'll next play Jackson State in Jackson, Mississippi. It's a doubleheader, 3 o'clock tomorrow in Mississippi. Then they go on to a tournament in Tallahassee, Florida. They'll be back to play ball games, of course, at the Bogle Field later this month. So congratulations to them. Congratulations to the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Lions baseball team. This weekend, they went down to San Antonio, Texas to take on number one in the country, St. Mary's, and won two of the three games down there.
Very cool.
Yes. Weather permitting, they will play Harding University at 1 o'clock tomorrow in Fort Smith.
Okay.
But check.
Yeah.
Because rain, snow, general late winter miserable conditions ahead.
Miserable? Don't you mean mix? Winter mix? I think that's what they call it, wintry mix.
It's a matter of perspective. Now, one more congratulations that's kind of connected to KUAF.
Oh.
Do you remember Helga?
I do.
Helga Coleman, whose maiden name was Helga Basker.
Yes.
She worked here at KUAF for some time.
Mm-hmm.
Her brother Jeff is a musician. Jeff Basker.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that. And when Helga worked here, she would sometimes say, hey, you want to watch Leno tonight because he's going to be playing with Kanye West or someone like that.
Uh-huh.
Well, record song of the year was We Are Young by Fun, correct?
Yeah.
Guess who produced that?
Seriously?
Jeff Basker.
Wow.
So he won a Grammy.
Very cool.
So
congratulations,
technically,
for sure.
I've never met him.
Well, no.
But I think he was at her wedding, and so was I, so I can say that, you know, I was at the wedding with. But that's great news.
The Grammy winner.
You played that at the end of the show yesterday, did you not?
I did.
All right.
I did. It's a good song.
So congratulations to all those folks.
Yes, and speaking of music, I heard yesterday, or maybe this morning, that Threepenny Acre is going to be performing at the Artist Fair Trail Mix Concert Series this year.
That's great.
Again, on my list of things to do, every year something happens and I don't make it out there.
Now, Trail Mix is going to be a little bit different. It's part of Artisphere.
Right.
It's been out by Lake Fayetteville the previous couple of years.
Right, but they also expanded it to Bentonville last year, and I could even make that one.
Well, this year, the Fayetteville portion and the Bentonville portion are on the same day, mm-hmm. both on Saturday. The Fayetteville portion will be right behind us, Antoinette, right down on the Frisco Trail there.
Okay, so I should not have an excuse.
And the Bentonville portion later that day will mm-hmm. be around Crystal Bridges, mm-hmm. not that far from where you live.
Okay.
So,
well,
as long as you don't have something
planned
out of town.
As long as I'm not out of town or something, right. And that's what I think may happen again. I'm just fated to never see this.
Trail Mix is where you can go along the trail at your own pace. There are six different acts that are playing live, and it's all free. And should there be rain on that particular day, the next day is the rain date.
Okay. Three Penny,
it's a mix of local, and usually they get like three of our own.
Sure.
And three people from outside of the region to play.
Right.
And they're spaced out along half a mile apart or something.
Right. And Three Penny Acres is very busy. They're working on a new album that's getting the finishing touches, getting printed and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
I think they're looking at April release.
Yes, that's what I understand.
And also, I'm excited to talk to Brian at some point because I'd like to know more about the Roots Festival because
yes.
he helped put that together. I'm very excited about that. Speaking of the Roots Festival,
yes.
Jay Wagner, an alum, he will be across the street from us today at the Fayetteville Public Library at 5:30 doing a songwriter's workshop. So that's very exciting. And also, personal note, the Steel Wheels, who were just here, they released a free live album today on noisetrade.com.
Noisetrade,
yes. And I'm sure you can go to their Facebook page or whatever and get the link there. But I was quite pleased because they had tested out a new song while they were in town at George's a couple weeks ago. And it's on the album, so I was real excited this morning. It's a good day for me.
Late winter is an excellent time to head indoors to galleries and art spaces in the region. In a moment, we'll meet three architecture students at the University of Arkansas showing their studies of place in the Ann Kittrell Art Gallery. First, a packed, though admittedly not comprehensive list of visual art opportunities in our region. The next few weeks offer several of those opportunities, beginning with a last chance. The exhibit, In Defense of Dark Art, A Didactic Experience, closes at the end of business tomorrow. The photography of Neil Holland and Kyle Agee can be seen at the John Brown University Art Gallery in Siloam Springs. Monday, a reception for an exhibit of art created by artists with lifestyles will be held at the Green Bean in Rogers. You can learn more at lifestylesinc.org. Thursday, the Fort Smith Regional Art Museum opens an adjacent exhibit to their already on view, The Secrets of Mona Lisa. The Valentine's Day opening preview of Mona Lisa's Daughters includes selected portraits from the Arkansas Art Center. A member's preview begins Thursday evening at 5. The collection is available for public viewing beginning Friday and will remain in Fort Smith through March 17th. Two exhibits currently up at the University of Arkansas will remain on display through the end of February. Employing Voice, Embracing Agency, Contemporary African-American Artists includes works from the collection of Darrell Walker, former University of Arkansas basketball star. The works can be seen in the university's Department of Fine Arts Gallery. Also lasting through the 28th, an exhibit of print works by Amos Kennedy Jr. He's based in Alabama, and he'll be featured on our program Friday. If you'd like to see his work before our interview airs, just go to the University of Arkansas Fine Arts Gallery. Award-winning works of high school students from across Northwest Arkansas can be seen at the Art Center of the Ozarks through the 22nd of this month. Then, opening on February 28th, will be award-winning art from students in grades kindergarten through 8th grade. That's also at the Art Center of the Ozarks in downtown Springdale. Meanwhile, the countdown is on to the opening of American Chronicles, The Art of Norman Rockwell, at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. The opening, 18 days away. That's March 9th. The exhibit will be free for members, $12 per person otherwise. An exhibit examining the role photography can play in architecture is open on the University of Arkansas campus this month. SiteWorks, A Discovery of Place, includes photography of five U of A architecture and landscape architecture students and was developed during an elective course last fall. Phoebe Liquor, a professor of landscape architecture, taught the class.
Photography is an under-taught area in architectural education. And I think it has the real capacity to be used by design students to learn about sites that are potential for built projects as a way to research the site and also as a catalyst for future design proposals.
Last night, Phoebe LaCour and three of the five students with work on the walls at the Art Gallery met me in the Ann Kittrell Gallery. Using photographs, the five collections each focus on one specific site in Northwest Arkansas. Nick Jabb selected a section of Fayetteville with a recent history of development, where a former power plant has been converted to a seafood restaurant and other business and residential sites have blossomed. The photos are contemporary, but have a ghostly quality after Nick has removed electric poles and utility lines and replace them with pale silhouettes.
The purpose behind sort of taking out the, extracting the images, the power lines out of the images, is to actually enhance their presence. It's sort of addition by subtraction. And they have they really have a powerful way of making space and defining space on the site and leading up to the site and around the site that's very particular to the powerhouse place, and I wanted to bring that out in the artifact because it's something that I discovered through the process of taking images on the site.
Well, Nick picked a location that has gone from overgrown to develop. Hannah Hefner's selection for a site to study with her digital camera is quite the opposite. She found a decaying warehouse where nature is reclaiming the floor, walls, and contents of the structure. She used the combination of natural light seeping in and the crumbling facade to find a new way to look at an old building.
There are holes in the walls that create this fantastic quality of light. It's different at any moment in the day, and then throughout the year it changes based on the season.
Hannah includes just over a couple dozen photos in her part of the exhibit, some pictures overlapping others, all bursting with vibrant colors from late summer. What she includes is less than 1% of what she shot.
Oh, I took maybe 2,000, 2,500 or something like that.
Jose Guardino chose to study downtown Rogers in both realistic drawings and photographs. He follows the patterns of the downtown area through 40-year spans, 1920, 1960, 2000, and his suggested concept of what the downtown could look like in 2040. He thinks his contribution to this exhibit might help viewers understand the value of building in an established downtown.
Many people will prefer to have like a parking space instead of a building or something like in downtown, and like basically for people they don't recognize that it's more important to have these spaces together than like all spread. And basically what they had before, it was like just perfect, like everything was like really close to each other, and now they're trying to like spread everything and occupy more land instead of putting them all together.
Jose, Nick, and Hannah, as well as the other students included in the exhibit, Hector Bello and Robert Whitmore, are used to studying place for their projects. That's what architects and landscape architects do. They're also used to exposing their work to faculty, professionals, and fellow students in the School of Architecture. What's unusual for them right now is having their work on walls for the general public to inspect. Nick Jabb says he relishes this opportunity.
I think it's good to have those conversations. Both when you can explain your work to someone else, it means you can explain it to yourself, first of all, and that's important. But also, people who don't come from a design field necessarily have equally as important things to say about these processes that are going on, and the final artifacts as well. So it's always interesting to hear those little vignettes.
I really care about the emotions associated with sites.
Hannah Hefner, another of the artists in the Site Work show.
So I really love asking people what they think of my photographs, and I love hearing suggestions of like other places I should go, because everyone has their special places that they are really attached to in a lot of ways.
Phoebe LaCour, who taught the class that evolved into this month's exhibit, says the power of photography remains vitally important for architects.
I think the thing I'm most interested in about photography is the way that it allows you to focus on the kind of ephemeral experiential qualities of a place, the temporal aspects of a place, And the spatial aspects of a place. And that's why I think it's so germane to the design professions and people involved in changing the built environment.
A reception for the five students' work is tonight at the Ann Kittrell Gallery inside the Arkansas Student Union on the University of Arkansas campus. It begins at 6:30, and the reception is free and open to the public. And the exhibit will remain up through the 21st.
It's an NPR News special, live coverage of President Obama's State of the Union address. I'm Melissa Blogg. Join me for in-depth analysis and reaction from members of Congress. You'll also hear the Republicans' response to the president's speech. It's an NPR News special, President Obama's State of the Union address.
The State of the Union live coverage tonight at 8 o'clock on KUAF 91.3 FM. It will also include the Republican response as well as analysis from the NPR News team. Live coverage beginning at 8 tonight on KUAF 91.3 FM. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Monroe, Oklahoma.
Monroe, Oklahoma. I do not think I've ever been to Monroe, Oklahoma.
I may have on accident. It's south southeast of Bodo.
Okay. Is it on a major highway?
83.
Is that a major highway? I don't know. I don't know. My Oklahoma geography, I haven't been to Oklahoma for a little bit, so.
It's a bigger one.
Okay.
I mean, it's one of those in-between ones.
Okay. Maybe I've been there, too.
The line of the map's not that big, so.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
This note, KUAF has updated the online audio stream player, and we're in the process of replacing the streaming computer. You can visit KUAF.com. Click on Listen Live Player. Once the player is up, click Reload. And the new player will be able to offer a trouble-free signal from KUAF, from KUAF2, that's our 24-hour-a-day classical music service, and from KUAF3, which provides many news and information shows like the BBC that you don't hear on this signal. The new streaming computer will be installed tomorrow.
Hooray.
Please forgive us for our service outages at this time. So again, beginning tomorrow, go to KUAF.com, click on Listen Live Player, then hit Reload, and you should be ready to go.
Perfect. Happy to hear that's getting taken care of.
Yes, because I know many people listen on their computer.
Mm-hmm.
And soon, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here, soon an Android app as well. We have the iPhone app.
Mm-hmm.
Soon an Android app coming as well.
I hear the rumors of such things.
Yes, so stay tuned. Don't forget Fat Tuesday celebrations. At least, I'm not saying these are the only ones, but I know that Eureka Springs and Fayetteville.
Yes, I know I'll be wondering about Fayetteville this evening.
Even if it's snowing?
I mean, I might as well.
Okay. All right.
I mean, I don't think, from what I understand, I was on the Fayetteville Cruise Facebook page earlier, and they said, regardless, they're going to be out there second lining it. So.
I was more concerned with the fact that, you know, you would be driving to Rogers.
Well, it looks like it may not get bad until, like, later in the evening.
All right.
Well, so it'll probably be okay. So there's possibility of snow and ice and whatnot, but I mean, who knows?
Right.
Because sometimes people I don't want to say people overreact, but I mean, they expect the worst and prepare for that. So that's not necessarily a bad thing, but maybe, you know, we might wake up tomorrow and there might be nothing on the ground.
Right. Right.
Never know the weather.
The prayers of school children all over Northwest Arkansas.
Of course, but children, they are praying for some good snow. Yes. And I don't think we've had a snow day. We've had some sick days, but not any snow days.
No.
I don't think.
No, I don't think so. I think the only snow that's happened in Northwest Arkansas in this winter was right after Christmas. Wasn't there a dusting? I was out of town.
There was a little bit. And then there's been a couple of like days with flurries.
Right.
But it doesn't stick or anything like that. Are you doing anything for Mardi Gras?
I don't think so.
No?
I mean, I hate to be... Can you be Scrooge for Fat Tuesday? Maybe. I don't know.
Sure.
I don't have anything planned.
Okay.
That's fine.
No worries.
Okay.
So, I'm looking forward to it.
I sound
staid
and dull.
No, you don't.
Okay, all right.
No, you don't.
Well, you have fun.
I will.
Everyone else have fun. Enjoy yourself responsibly and be careful if it does start to snow. Please.
Mm-hmm.
All right, tomorrow on the show, you and I back together.
We are.
We have a preview of Sons of the Prophet from Theater Squared.
We do.
We have Grace Kelly talking to Robert Ginsberg about her concerts Friday night.
We're continuing our series on Ozarks at Large inspired foods with a crepe. I'm very excited about that. It was delicious.
Crepe made in Bentonville. All right, that's tomorrow as well, plus more. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellens.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks so much for listening, and have a safe Tuesday night.
Happy Mardi Gras.
I'm sure you'll see the Zulu Queen.